And welcoming you, dear listeners, to this Sunday session of My Sunday Morning Take. The sounds that you just heard there were the song came from the group known as Future Islands with the song Deep in the Night. Before that, it was Groove Armada with What You Gonna Do About It, and Si Tangana before that with the song Los Tontos. Now, ultimately, where you find yourself, obviously, is every Sunday morning between 5 and 7 a.m., specifically when you're in my company. We take a look specifically at talking points that originate from around the world. I know, in terms of this last Sunday specifically of 2025, you know, it's got to be a conversation, you know, that, will obviously continue. Not this particular conversation, but the conversation obviously of My Sunday Morning Take next week as well. But just to highlight, you know, that this is the last Sunday for 2025. And obviously wherever you find yourself, dear listeners, let's hope that you are having a blast of a time, specifically in terms of the spirit of holiday. If you are still working, you know, welcome to the club specifically. Also, that's where I find myself as well. And if you are someone that's, they're about just trying to actually recharge your batteries, recharge your energy levels. All the best. And specifically, that is this particular spirit and attitude to have towards a holiday period. However, for our discussion for this morning, dear listeners, we're actually taking a look at an interesting development, which is a little bit of a scientific one here on My Sunday Morning Take that has a peculiar, let me actually say it's two things that have a peculiarity to them, but they are actually the same thing. So how did we get here? Yesterday I saw a very interesting particular sort of like short video on my YouTube feed. And it started off, you know, as many particular times, you know, they tell you a big fat lie. Sort of like to convince you to watch the video, and then you watch the video and you go like, but this does not seem like it is plausible. I mean, I've never heard of such an activity by Microsoft specifically to give people $5 million to sit for an hour in the world's quietest place. Now, the world's quietest place, which is our conversation today, is actually two manufactured audio, or if we can call them sort of like sound chambers. Well, they are, because the actual name for both of these two places, they're two sound labs or sound chambers. One is owned by Microsoft, the other one is owned by a company by the name of Orfield Laboratories, and it's known as an anechoic chamber. Now, when you go look, dear listeners, as, you know, as a curious mind, if you go Google search the quietest place on earth, you'll get interesting reads, and all of them will point towards the same two entities and the same two companies that built these two chambers. So these two chambers are literally like massive sound, sound studios or massive sound absorbing rooms with a lot of what do they call those particular things that we also have in our studio here, soundproof or soundproofing in it, installed in it. And the particular video, the short video that I obviously watched on my YouTube feed, started off by saying, Microsoft will offer you $5 million if you can last an hour in this room. And I went and looked it up, and there is no such particular, promotional activity on Microsoft's website regarding their anechoic chamber, nor is there such a particular reward also, illustrated on the Orfield Laboratories website as well, specifically for their chamber that they've got. So, you know, as always, specifically with social media particular posts, you know, they do lie a lot, and they actually do run a lot of scams, because everyone has asked, and there's even been various social media discussions, specifically on Reddit, and the other one is Quora, who have tried to understand, you know, is there really such a particular activity by, or promotion activity by, Microsoft for offering people $5 million to sit for an hour in the world's quietest place? I mean, it sounds easy. It sounds easy. So, minus the $5 million imaginary carrot that was being dangled, obviously, in front of everyone that watched that video, minus that failed incentive that was obviously being dangled there, it literally is difficult for people to sit in these two laboratories. Now, we will explain and get into the laboratories and the reason as to why they were constructed and why they were installed. But at the heart of the discussion, in terms of the challenge of sitting or lasting an hour within this room, look, all you've got to do is not make sound or actually test, you know, the whether or not it is what it says, a quiet place, because it absorbs all sound. And the other particular scenario is obviously how you get to listen to the various particular, let's just say, elements, for example, like your heart beating. Well, you would obviously hear your heart beating if you go and sit in a very quiet place as well. Not as quiet, obviously, as these anechoic chambers. And you realize, okay, you can also just take a jog around the block, up and down your street, or in your room. You know, you run on the spot in your room. You'll also hear your heartbeat through your ears, obviously, because that's as you hear the blood being pumped in your head. However, an anechoic chamber literally absorbs all sound. And after the musical break, dear listeners, we'll be coming back and we'll be heading into that particular explainer of the sound absorption qualities of an anechoic chambers. And on that note, you're here on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and this is my Sunday morning take on this lovely, it seems like the clouds are still out, you know, when I came into the studio, because they were pretty silent and proud hanging above me. But obviously, wherever you find yourself across the country, I do hope that it has also rained on your side. I do hope that you're also going to potentially have lovely weather your side. Lovely weather in us, as you know, in Namibia is obviously a combination of either if it's rain or if the sun is just not, you know, trying to ash us into oblivion as always. But on that note, dear listeners, we'll be back after the short break.
Say only fools rush in, but I can't help falling in love with you. Some things are meant to be.
scheming while the time away. Yester me, yesterday, yesterday.
Back there from the sounds of Stevie Wonder with the song of Yesteryear, or Yester Me, Yester You. And before that was the sounds of Elvis Presley with Can't Help Falling in Love. And obviously, you're here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM, and this is my Sunday Morning Take, where we are still getting into the quietest place discussion here on this Sunday morning session, where you're in my company from 5 to 7. Now, speaking of the anechoic chamber and the particular, you know, sort of like, I'll call it like fake news, even though I don't like using that particular term, but there was a major carrot being hung or dangled from the particular video. I mean, telling me that, you know, potentially Microsoft will pay anyone $5 million US dollars to sit in a chamber, at least for an hour. Well, it sounded interesting. There's a particular reason as to why the anechoic chambers of both Oldfield Laboratories and Microsoft were built. Specifically, if you get into the reason as to why they were built, these particular chambers actually have an interesting use. Now, an anechoic chamber, which if you pronounce it is A-N-E-choic, so it's C-H-O-I-C, means non-reflective or without echo. Now, this is a room that is designed to stop reflections or echoes of either sound or electromagnetic waves. And if you did not know this, much of the particular things that we hear, which are sounds, are some sort of a sound wave. They're a wave. They're a particular kind of a vibration that takes place or that is being transmitted or that occurs somewhere in the world. Now these particular chambers are also often isolated from energy, from entering from their surroundings, meaning nothing can come in, nothing can go out. The first thing that these particular rooms try to eliminate or seal off, if you wish to use either of the two terminologies that would describe the same particular objective would be that they aim to isolate any sound that is created within and to block out any sound coming from outside heading inwards. If you guys had not known, sometimes you can hear in full, sort of not in HD quality, but rather in some, impactful manner, sound from the street or sound from next door or sound from, somewhere in a different zone of your locality or your neighborhood or wherever you stay. You hear different sounds generated by different people and different things and items in other parts around you. And this could even be as you had closed your windows, you had closed and locked your doors, and you just, you closed your curtains and you tried to block out as much sound as possible that it would be generated from outside. The downside is that in many cases, how the sound comes through is that you've got certain spots in your house or the place that you live in that are too thin to block out the sounds. For example, windows. Windows are not designed to block out sound. Windows are designed to firstly be a way for you to see from inside outside to the outside, and secondly to be a manner in terms of which to even open up, parts of the window to allow fresh air or, to flow in and stuff like that. But windows are not designed to block out sound. Yes, you can get soundproof windows somewhere. I know, you do. But obviously that makes things a little bit more expensive for you, and all you want is just basic protection or a basic facilitating function. Now, when you look at anechoic rooms or anechoic chambers, there is no window. There is no window. Yes, there is a light. Yes, there would be a door handle to a door that opens and allows you in and allows you out. But there are no windows because this is obviously a chamber that is aimed or designed at blocking out sound. Another scenario is obviously that in many cases, the example that I gave you in terms of if you try to block out as many external sound from coming in your house or in your flat, wherever you find yourself, by closing the windows, closing the doors, locking everything, pulling the curtains and closing it up and, trying to just generate that sense, that environment of no sound coming in, there would still be elements in your vicinity. For example, your refrigerator. If you guys have ever tried locking up at night, switching off the lights, closing the windows, pulling the curtains, locking the doors, and you now just stand there in the silence after you've done all that, have you guys realized how much noise a refrigerator makes? The fridge? Have you guys realized how much noise that thing makes? In many cases, you even wonder as if, is this possible? Because during the course of the day, you don't pay attention to the amount of noise coming from the fridge because you've opened up the doors, you're moving about, you're creating your own sounds and noises. And at the heart of it, the refrigerator, when you've tried to go to sleep, is generating so much sound. Because you can hear it on the other side of the flat, on the other side of the house, because you get houses that are designed that literally travel, they literally transport noise to the furthest corners of the house. And then you wonder, did this fridge ever make this much sound? Did it generate as much noise? Also something specifically that certain particular computers, for example, for those of us that sleep with our computers on, you just let it switch into power saving mode and then you go sleep, or you just put it on log off, or you just log off and you go sleep, you don't switch it off. In some cases, that thing also generates as much sound. Now with anechoic chambers, getting back, remember, we're talking about the externalities, meaning the external sound being generated and the internal sound being generated. With this anechoic chambers, they are often iced, they're also often isolated from energy entering from their surroundings. Now, this particular combination, which is the blocking of sound and electromagnetic waves, means that a person or a detector exclusively hears direct sounds, no reflected sounds. Specifically, in effect, simulating being outside in a free field. So this potentially means no external sound, and specifically no other sounds in the immediate vicinity of the individual from hearing anything else that would exist. Now, anechoic chambers, a term that was coined by an American acoustics expert, Leo Beranek, were initially exclusively used to refer to acoustic anechoic chambers. Recently, the term has been extended to other radio frequency and sonar anechoic chambers, which eliminate reflection and external noise caused by electromagnetic waves. So, there's a lovely, obviously, I've got the luxury here with my literature resources that give me an illustration of the photos of what it looks like. So specifically, it's a massive sound capturing room, specifically with soundproofing on, but specifically designed soundproofing. And all you've got to do is try to sit still in this particular room, according to that fake challenge that is shared on YouTube. Now, anechoic chambers range from small compartments the size of a household microwave oven to ones as large as aircraft hangars. Now, the size of the chamber also depends on the size of the objects and the frequency ranges that are being tested, obviously. Now, if you try to look up what the quietest place for, the particular, what Microsoft and Allfield, both of them are doing, because both of them own these particular facilities, is that for Microsoft, they explain that they are trying to break the world's quietest record. Obviously, this record is held by Allfield Laboratories, because they own the Guinness 2012 and 2021 quietest place on the earth record. And the anechoic chamber designed by them is defined as a room with high levels of sound absorption, absorbing 99.99% of sound, located in Allfield's obviously NVLAP accredited laboratory. This is an acoustic laboratory. This particular anechoic chamber is obviously fully anechoic, according to them, with the addition of reflecting plane on the floor, or of a reflecting plane on the floor, and that approximately nominal dimensions of the chamber are something, specifically in terms of the size of what it looks like. So it's literally the size of this particular studio that I'm sitting with, that they obviously highlighted. But this is something that they've installed in 1997 and that the lab submitted to the Guinness measurement guys for the low levels of sound that have been recorded in the chamber. At minus 9.4 decibels, at minus 13.4 decibels, and at minus 24.9 decibels. Now, supposedly, the human ear can hear anything from 0 to 120 decibels. Let me say that again. According to what has been measured, the human ear can hear from 0 to 120 decibels. Positive 120, not negative 120. But they've recorded silence, the levels of sound, at minus 24.9. Obviously, with Microsoft in their particular goal, is that they're trying to break this quietest record of 2021. And obviously, they have their own particular sort of like story on their website, where they've measured a Brownian motion at minus 23 decibels. The quietest sound theorized by mathematicians is Brownian motion. This is the movement of particles in a gas or a liquid. And the next step was, you know, to try and measure what would it sound like in a vacuum, like space, with complete absence of sound. Obviously, this then led to the anechoic chamber that they designed, measuring things at minus 20 decibels of sound. And that the sound floor in Microsoft's anechoic chamber is closer to the Brownian motion than it is to even other anechoic chambers, and it has the lowest sound ever recorded and is the optimal environment for audio testing. So, the adult breath, what we adults can, you know, that action of us breathing is at a measurement of 12 to 20 cycles per minute. And that value can drop to 10 cycles per minute or 6 seconds per breath. This state of calm is often called rest and digest. State of rest and digest, meaning that's where our body is resting, as also it's busy digesting, versus the state of aggression known as the fight or flight. Obviously, a lot of reaction taking place. Leaves or rustling leaves are recorded at a sound level of 20 decibels. Depending on wind levels, air moving through dried leaves and trees is considered so relaxing for many people that it is actually stock sound in many meditation apps. A refrigerator that I mentioned is actually very coincidental that they actually also bring in a refrigerator here. A refrigerator's noise level is at 40 decibels. A bottom freezer and a side-by-side models tend to be the quietest types of refrigerators that you can find, but some models are loud enough to affect nearby conversations as well. True. Normal conversation takes place at 60 decibels. Many sound amplifying hearing aids can help improve people's ability to understand conversations. And these hearing aids also filter out the background noise and can be turned specifically for frequencies of human voices. If you have to look at various particular everyday life movements, for example, like a train ride and, you know, specifically in city scenarios or in metropolitan scenarios, the New York subway records a sound level of 90 decibels. Screeching wheels on metal tracks and air being forced through the tunnel contribute to the noise generated by a subway. Prolonged exposure to any sounds above 85 decibels can cause long-term hearing loss. Elephant trumpeting comes through at 112 decibels at 1 meter. Elephants can produce a variety of sounds, from blaring trumpeting calls to low-frequency rumbles far below the human range of hearing. Their calls can be detected and identified by other elephants from 1.5 kilometers away. You also have to look at sports fans. A whole bunch of sports fans in a stadium can generate 140 decibels. Enthusiastic fans at major sporting events have been known to reach 140 decibels, and the physics of stadium structures amplify sounds and further excite roaring fans. And going even higher, if you have to look at a jet plane taking off, meaning its ascent, as it's obviously departing from the runway, it can generate 150 decibels at 25 meters. So a jet noise is produced by the difference between the speed of the air coming out of the engine and the speed of the air passing through the engine or around the particular plane itself. And additional sound is created by the rotation of the turbines or the fans, specifically that a turbine is, within the engine. Going even louder, a NASA Saturn V rocket generates 170 decibels at 100 meters. The Saturn V rocket was part of the Apollo program for human exploration of the moon, and at close range, the sound reached 220 decibels and was capable of melting concrete. The sound was capable of melting concrete. Finally, the loudest particular recorded sound that had been recorded was the Krakatoa eruption of 1883, which recorded at least 170 decibels at 100 miles. Meaning, when the eruption occurred of Krakatoa, yes, that is the volcano's name. When the eruption occurred, the people were so far away. They were 100 miles is 150 kilometers away. At 150 kilometers, they could record the eruption at 170 decibels. So what do you think the sound, how strong that sound was, that eruption was, if you were within, let's say, 10 kilometers of Krakatoa? Obviously, being within 10 kilometers of Krakatoa would mean that debris from the eruption possibly could strike you. Because in 1883, the eruption of Krakatoa in Indonesia, it is still the loudest recorded sound known to man. The sound from the eruption ruptured the eardrums of sailors that were 40 miles away. It ruptured the eardrums of sailors that were 40 miles away. And it traveled around the world 3.5 times. The sound traveled around the earth 3.5 times. Now, if you're seeing something measured, a sound that was generated, measured at such a level, this obviously should highlight to you primarily how important and impactful sound is. And yes, you get negatives, you know. Too much sound obviously creates an annoyance. Very few sounds sometimes also makes things very hard to listen or to pay attention to specifically. I mean, there were instances, it was someone I kept asking to please speak up because the person spoke so low and so softly. I had to ask the person, but it happened like, you know, just a couple of weeks, before we were headed here into the holiday program, and I had to ask the person, please speak up. I mean, I can just see your lips moving, but why do you speak so soft? Especially if you're trying to present something to a group of people and all I'm hearing is just your mouth. I just see your mouth moving. And she tried to, you know, the lady tried to explain specifically that this is unfortunately how she is. And I'm like, dude, then take a, a microphone and speak up. And it literally, there was an opportunity to use a microphone to try and speak up. But yeah, so there are certain instances. There's also one or two particular people. Even if you give them a microphone, I still cannot hear them. For some reason, I don't know why, their voices just don't, you know, they don't speak. And they don't speak in terms of putting more particular vigor into their voices. But that's obviously on the sound production side of things. And our discussion is based on the sound elimination or sound testing side of things. Now, obviously, with that particular illustration of, you know, the sound barrier and specifically of what have been the loudest recorded sounds in human history, we'll take a short musical break, dear listeners, and after that we'll come back heading into the second half of today's program, or this morning's program specifically, on My Sunday Morning Take, and we'll be back right after this. You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. Want to take a trip through history's major events or explore interesting geographical features and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world.
Yeah.
And that obviously brings us to the second half of this morning's program here on my Sunday Morning Take, here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM. Welcoming you back from the musical break, dear listeners. Obviously, as we're here on your holiday listening, and specifically on your holiday programming, and wherever you find yourself and listening to us from, once again, good morning. I do hope, at least for those of you that have been up with me, have been awake as well, that you at least have had a cup of coffee. And with that particular cup of coffee, obviously, you know, having set your mood for the rest of the day. Not that I'm saying that coffee has some sort of a mystic power or a particular element of, you know, setting in the particular scene in a way. But it does actually sort of like, for those of us who are coffee connoisseurs, in some cases, addicts as well. But yeah, welcoming you back specifically from that music break and where we left off with the anechoic chamber discussion has been one specifically that obviously, these particular chambers are built obviously, you know, depending on various sizes, the particular aim that they wish to achieve. Now, an acoustic anechoic chamber is that certain particular requirements have obviously have to be obviously met. And remember, this is a research and development exercise that is that it is being used for. So the requirement for what was subsequently called an anechoic chamber originated to allow testing of loudspeakers that generated such intense sound levels that they could not be tested outdoors in inhabited areas, meaning where people were living, the speakers could not be tested outside specifically because the speakers would generate so much sound, it would constitute noise pollution. You know, the particular thing that, you know, City of Windhoek sometimes shows up, or City Police sometimes shows up to highlight and tell, you know, if you're a having a house party or if you're a... It seems like you are an establishment that's open just too late on certain days. Then City Police's guys show up and they ask you, okay, where's your special liquor license? Or did you ask permission to be this loud at 2 a.m.? So it's there to firstly test certain particular sound equipment. Now, anechoic chambers are commonly used in acoustics to conduct experiments in nominally free field conditions. Free field obviously means that there are no reflected signals. Nothing else coming in, nothing else generating sound to literally, you know, influence whatever exercise might be done. And all sound energy will be traveling away from the source with almost with none of the sound being reflected back. Now, the common anechoic chamber experiments include measuring the transfer function of a loudspeaker or the directivity of noise radiation, meaning in what direction is noise being generated from or to. Specifically, let's say if you've got a speaker that is pointing ahead in front of you, that is a direction, meaning if the speaker is switched on, it's generating noise in front of it, away from it. Or if you're standing in front of a speaker, you'll obviously know from which direction the sound is coming from. Because if you turn your head left and right, you'll be able to see which of the two ears is firstly being sort of like inconvenienced by the level of sound that the speaker is generating. Another particular scenario, obviously, is also with this particular transfer function of a loudspeaker or the directivity of noise radiation, that is obviously being measured, It sometimes also measures industrial machinery and its, and their particular levels of sound that they can generate. I mean, one of the most annoying industrial machinery to hear is a jackhammer. And I got, and I know you guys have also heard the level of sound a jackhammer makes. And that thing is, besides being heavy for the poor, you know, work crew that has to operate the particular device itself, its sound is unbearable. In many cases, people just want to walk by as quick as possible. If you've not noticed the particular body language of many people who walk past certain particular construction settings, and if there's a jackhammer being used, the people walk even faster just to get away from the sound as quickly as possible. Now, in general, the interior of an anechoic chamber can be very quiet. It actually is very quiet because it blocks out all particular sound that would be generated externally. And its aim is literally to lower the level of sound within it for whatever particular experiment should happen. But with typical noise levels in the 10 to 20 decibel range, in 2005, the best anechoic chamber measured at least minus 9.4 decibels. In 2015, an anechoic chamber on the campus of Microsoft broke the world record with a measurement of minus 20.6 decibels. And the human ear can typically detect sounds above 0 decibels, meaning we can't hear anything below 0. From 0 to 120. Remember that, guys. Our ears can hear from 0 to 120. At 170 with the Krakatoa eruption of 1886, the sailor's ears ruptured, meaning it was too loud. Now, the human ear can typically detect these sounds, can detect sounds at 0 decibels or above 0 decibels. So a human in such a chamber would perceive the sound, the surroundings, as being devoid of sound. Anecdotally, sometimes some people may not like such silence and can become disoriented, because the particular video that obviously sent me on this particular rabbit hole of looking into what an anechoic chamber is, it highlighted how some people were. They became restless, firstly. Secondly, some of them became not spooked out, but more it sort of like made them uneasy being in a place so quiet where they literally said they could hear their own heart beating. But I just told you at the start of this discussion, you can run up and down the street and stand still, and then you would hear your heart beating in a very, you know, obviously with a lot of other sound. Sounds and noise being made around you, you will hear your heart beating because your heart is literally beating, trying to pump the blood throughout the rest of your heart, your body, and you'll hear it in your ears. You can even close off your ears and do this, and you'll hear your heart beating after you had taken that run, because if you just stimulate your heart with a little bit of exercise or a little bit of activity, or strenuous activity, it'll literally do that for you. Now, obviously, the disorientation is a a uneasy feeling to experience. Being that specifically that when it comes to seeing a place that is devoid of sound, it makes things very spooky for many of the people that have visited it. The mechanism by which anechoic chambers minimize the reflection of sound waves impinging onto the walls is also a very important thing to take into consideration. And like I stated at the start of the discussion, an anechoic chamber should be viewed as a massive soundproofing chamber, a room with so much soundproofing on it that literally it literally looks like, you know, some sort of a weird detention cell because of the soundproofing that is used. So, an incident, obviously, of sound wave, is a scenario that you've got to consider, that it impinges onto a wall of an anechoic chamber. So what does this mean? Any sound you generate, you have to look at the experiment that is obviously conducted within this chamber, as the sound tries to have an impact on the wall of this particular room. And the idea is, like I explained to you, when you close off your windows, you lock your doors, you draw your curtains closed, the idea is you try to see how much sound you actually block from outside from getting in. And in some cases, also to try and understand to what levels of silence you can achieve internally. Now, since an anechoic chamber is used to test equipment, the idea is how much sound can you generate specifically in this particular chamber. Now, this wall is composed of a series of wedges which have a W with an H with a height of with a specific height. So if you had to see what the room's padding looks like or the soundproofing looks like, on one side it looks like a W. You know, it looks like zigzags, and it looks like some futuristic kind of a setting situation. But it's literally just that the soundproofing was arranged on the wall, that it gives the illustration of W's and H's that it gives you. If you look at it, it looks like two lines lying sideways, two lines standing up, two lines lying sideways, two lines standing up. The best illustration, obviously, to think about is think of the equals to sign. Put it as its natural, you know, on the side, and make it stand up as two lines standing up, and then that would be, you know, looking at a scenario of an anechoic chamber, soundproofing that is installed in it. Now, the important thing is obviously to see whether or not the sound can actually bounce off the walls, when the sound is obviously tested within the chamber, and they use the word impinge or impingement, specifically as they try to see whether or not the incident wave, the first sound wave that is generated, is reflected as a series of waves which in turn would bounce up and down in a gap of air. Now, that obviously is how the experiment flows and what the experiment tries to do. And obviously they try to see how the sound then interacts with the soundproofing that is installed within the anechoic chamber. When you've got to look at semi, and there are also different versions of anechoic chambers that exist in the world, you get semi-anechoic and you get hemi-anechoic chambers. Now, full anechoic chambers aim to absorb energy in all directions. To do this, all surfaces, which include the floor, need to be covered in correctly shaped wedges, which is the explainer of the soundproofing that I mentioned. A mesh grill is also usually installed above the floor to provide a surface to walk on and to place equipment on. I used to remember there was a time when the IT students, the guys that were my friends on university, explained in some cases, you know, what their textbooks told them how you need to operate when you're dealing with hardware, the hardware of a computer. And they had this weird explainer where they explained, if you're dealing with electrical equipment, you need to have an anti-static mat, you need to have anti-static equipment, meaning shoes, clothing, for you to work with the motherboards and the other particular component parts of a computer, if you are building and assembling and disassembling a computer specifically, for whatever reason it might be, in the workshop or in the laboratory. You can also use the phrase laboratory. And I asked the question sometimes because at that stage, you know, sometimes you were sitting with an idea of why would you need an anti-static mat and anti-static equipment and all that. But obviously, you know, you didn't ask the question because you didn't look, you don't want to look like, you don't want to look like a fool in front of your friends. So you don't ask a question. But other particular parts, I went and, you know, looked up why would there be, certain particular, you know, requirements for wearing certain kinds of shoes when you're dealing with electrical equipment. Even the electricians, if you ask them, some of them would give you a half-baked answer. But what I found out specifically when it comes to working with electrical equipment and certain particular, environments and, what sometimes is required of the people who work with these things is they need obviously certain kinds of uniforms that firstly does not allow them to, be conductors of electricity. And if you did not know that, the human body is a conductor of electricity. That's why the phrase being grounded or grounded always exists when people are dealing with electricity. And in some cases, you don't want to conduct or actually, you know, share or give off some sort of electric charge to electric equipment if you're dealing with electric equipment on a daily basis. And in some cases, what happens with an electric charge that comes through from a human onto electric equipment is that it actually, you know, damages the equipment and the circuitry. This has happened before. A weird story to tell you. It's this current computer, but a little bit earlier, like back in 2018, 2017, I wanted to, because the case of the computer is, it's metallic, but it's a certain metallic that I didn't expect would have a negative impact on the circuitry of the computer. And the unfortunate thing what I did, if you guys know how we as humans act, we sometimes being unaware that we create some hand gestures and interactions create static electricity. So what I did before I switched on the computer was unintentionally, because it was not the aim, but the intent was to sort of like make sure that my hands were not greasy of anything. And I had rubbed my hands against my shirt. And when I extended my hand to switch on the computer by pressing the button, static electricity, sort of like a reaction of static electricity was observed. And the PC shut down. And then I went and explained to a friend of a guy that I knew that, and I worked with him, hey, listen, man, because he was in the IT department, could you help fix my computer? Because I think I transferred static electricity onto the device. And he explained, and he was like, so that what happened. Then he explained to me one of my, USB ports was literally damaged because of that unnecessary surge of electricity that came from my body onto the device because of the static electricity that I had created by just that simple gesture, that simple action of wiping my hands on my clothes and specifically trying to switch on and then extending it to the device. So it's very important. In many cases, obviously, the manufacturers have manufactured devices, electrical equipment and the likes to such an extent where they are insulated from any particular static electricity that you as a human generate and create. But obviously, you know, accidents do happen and weird anomalies do come about and do occur. And just so that you know specifically, when it comes to when the explainer of this anechoic room or chamber's particular equipment and sort of like the composition of it is explained, you get an understanding in a sense in terms of also the highly controlled environment that the researchers work under, technically for them to try and achieve the best case results for whatever exercise that they wish to conduct in the chamber itself. Now, before we continue, dear listeners, we're going to take a short musical break. And after the musical break, we're going to come back and head into the rest of this morning's My Sunday Morning Take.
like a snowflake dancing down an empty road. I don't wanna change, but I'm running out of time. I got lost in the darkness, thought I'd get somewhere, but I slowly disconnected from my own best friend.
And coming back there with the sound specifically of New Guinea with Bar Mediterraneo. And before that, it was a little bit of the War on Drugs with the song I Don't Wanna Wait. And specifically where we find ourselves leaning into the last 30 minutes of this morning's session. If you've just woken up, good morning, good morning, good morning, obviously. And specifically those of you that have been with me ever since the start of 5 a.m. or this morning session. You know, I do hope you've at least had your breakfast and at least had your cup of coffee. And that you're at least, you know, sort of like well-oriented into this morning's sessions or the flow of this morning's particular, you know, routine, whatever particular routine you'd be starting off on. Where we left off specifically with the anechoic chamber discussion and the record for being the quietest place on the planet, specifically that being owned by the two sound labs operated by Oldfield Laboratories and Microsoft, is you also get a situation where semi-anechoic and hemi-anechoic chambers have a solid floor that act as a work surface for supporting heavy items. Now, the obvious indication you get from this is that they might not be as completely soundproof as a full anechoic chamber, like the two that we already highlighted and showcased in our discussion, primarily because this means that they've got to look at things of larger items like cars or the engines of cars or washing machines or other industrial equipment that need to be tested, and which obviously cannot be supported by the mesh grill in a full anechoic chamber, specifically that the mesh grill itself could be damaged because the equipment that is to be tested from these larger devices or mechanical elements are ultimately heavier. They are just heavier. Now, recording studios are also often considered semi-anechoic, recording studios for musical artists. Now, the distinction between semi and hemi is also a little bit unclear because it depends, obviously, potentially on what particular purpose said particular state is measured, specifically being that in some uses, they could also be identified as a synonym, or that only one term can be used in this particular consideration. In other uses, to distinguish the one as having an ideally reflective floor, meaning it creates a free field conditions with a single reflective surface, and the other is simply having a flat untreated floor. So potentially it's a status of or a situation of whose floor is under what particular particular state or condition. Other uses also distinguish them by the size and the performance area, with one obviously being likely an existing room that is retrofitted with the acoustic treatment, meaning with the soundproofing, and also the other purpose built room, which is slightly larger and has better anechoic performance. You then get into the notion of the radio frequency that the anechoic chambers obviously try to sort of like deal with. Now, internal appearance of a radio frequency anechoic chamber is sometimes similar to that of an acoustic anechoic chamber, being that the interior surfaces of the radio frequency anechoic chamber are covered with radiation absorbent materials instead of acoustically absorbent materials. So when you look at radio frequency anechoic chambers, obviously they have, it's just the composition of the materials used for said particular absorption effect. Uses for the radio frequency anechoic chambers includes testing antennas and radars, because that's what they're obviously going to do. And they are typically used to house the antennas for performing measurements of antenna radiation patterns and electromagnetic interference. Now, performance expectations sometimes constitute primary challenges in designing standalone or embedded antennas. So this means the performance expectations would include things like gain, efficiency, pattern characteristics, and more. And the designs are obviously also becoming ever more complex, with a single device incorporating multiple technologies such as cellular, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, LTE, MIMO, MIMO, or RFID and GPS. And remember, this would be based upon measuring the device emitting these particular frequencies or frequency standards during testing. Now, on another thing also to consider when these chambers are constructed is that the kind of material that is used, obviously, for the said particular absorption exercise that has to be done. Now, weird thing also is, guys, there's actually also a photo here in front of me of a fighter jet in an anechoic test chamber. Now, I have seen research facilities where they test the aerodynamic design of not just the plane, also of cars. If you guys have ever seen a wind tunnel, specifically in any kind of advertising or advertisement, whether it be on TV or in the internet or in a magazine or in a print ad somewhere. So a wind tunnel is the aerodynamic test that is done with the shape and design of the particular device. So what gets aerodynamically tested? It's usually modes of transport. So we're talking about a car or a motorcycle or an airplane or a jet. I don't know about a helicopter, because helicopters, I mean, they have a weird design, and specifically the whole technology about them moving forward also allows them to move backwards, also allows them to move sideways, left and right, up and down. And it's not the similar technology used in a jet, because a jet's idea is to move as quickly as possible in a straight line. So if you're thinking about aerodynamics, you can just throw that whole question of aerodynamics out of the window with when it comes to a helicopter. But when you obviously look at a wind tunnel, and a wind tunnel tests aerodynamic design, so too also you would try to see at what level does the technology associated to pushing the mode of transport forward, meaning what allows it to move, you'll probably also try to test the level of sound of the device. Now, the radiation absorbent material used in this anechoic chamber, this other kind of anechoic chamber that is measured for radio frequencies, or that uses radiation, is designed and shaped to absorb incident radio frequency radiation, also known as non-ionizing radiation, as effectively as possible, from as many incident directions as possible. The more effective the radiation absorbent material, the lower the resulting level of reflected radio frequency radiation. Many measurements in electric magnetic compatibility, meaning, the particular scenario with regards to how these frequencies are obviously generated, and the antenna radiation patterns require that spurious signals arising from the test setup, including reflections, are negligible to avoid the risk of causing measurement errors and ambiguities. So, just like with a wind tunnel, this is a test, specifically a test chamber or a particular element that is aimed at ensuring that the best results from the tests are achieved. And that said particular results translate to the best possible outcomes for, you know, for industrial application. Now, I know in a Namibian context, we don't know much of a research and development scenario. I say this with, you know, with just academic insight specifically in terms of, based upon what the research and development report of 2024 by the NCRST has highlighted, that we do very little, research and development exercises. And if research is done, it's predominantly done in the IT, in the engineering and the other particular science-based or mathematics-based fields. And then we ignore anything regarding the humanities elements of the Namibian society and the broader Namibian population and surrounding areas. But we also do a lot of research specifically of the natural environment of Namibia. And in many cases, that research is also contained in certain elements. But we don't do research and development, which is also another weird thing. Reason being is that most of the research stations in Namibia are sort of like, I don't want to say permission run, but they are operated under the funding from international donors or partners. And they might be Namibian stationed there, but the Namibians generate knowledge not just for Namibia, but for some other parts in the world. And specifically, potentially research and development takes place somewhere else, even though it's foundational or first level research that takes place here. But research and development of technologies and other stuff take place somewhere else. Now, I've also only read of in a book of research and development specifically with the aim of testing after a prototype has been developed of an item, a product, or good. And that specifically was in the book known as Freakonomics. No, Think Like a Freak, sorry. The book's name was Think Like a Freak, the book that I have. Written by the same two economists, the two Stevens, that I call them the two Stevens, that they wrote. And this was written in 20-something, 2011 or 2013, because I had that book, I have that book for long. And in that specific book itself, one specific chapter of that book was that there's a company in the US that tests the durability, the actual design function of a product, of a physical product. If you go tell in your advert or in your advertisements, in your marketing campaign, in the market that this product cannot break if you throw it at the floor, then you have to take a prototype of that product to this company, and this company tests the limits of this product to its fullest. And then they derive their own analysis and they write their report about it and they submit the report to you so that you know whether or not your marketing campaign might be over promising or is actually living up to the hype that it wants to speak of. And it's an effective scenario there because it's pretty basic. Research and design. In its approach, it's pretty basic. In its particular application, obviously it has a highly technical system. I mean, for example, with my alma mater being NUST, NUST subscribes to the American Psychology Association's manner of citation and report writing. So the way you use references and reference material to write your research reports is based upon the American Psychology Association's particular standard. I don't know what UNAM uses or IUM uses, what particular standards they use, but I've obviously been indoctrinated for so long that I know, you know, what the APA standard looks like. And it's a manner in terms of how easy it is to, for the reader to read the research findings laid out and discovered by said particular researcher. Now, when you look at situations like that, or scenarios of research and testing, anechoic chambers obviously should tell you that these chambers are designed to test actual designs. Not, we look at the mathematical formula of how, you know, you came about to the shape of the window of a car or the windscreen of a car. We have to look into the mathematical formula there. No. It's after the debates of the mathematical formula have been concluded. It's now literally when the guys in the workshop went and made the window. The window is tested. They went and made the shoe. The shoe is tested. They went and made the machine that has to make the shoe. The machine is being tested. They went and made the shirt. The shirt has to be tested. If you say your shirt is heavy duty and can protect the wearer of the shirt in various conditions, whether it be sun, shine, rain, storm, whatever, or if you are working on the farm or if you're working in the workshop, the shirt must be there to protect the user. It gets tested. Now, obviously, when it comes to the situations of anechoic chambers and the likes, and even wind tunnels and the likes, variations of this particular testing facility has to be installed. And in many cases, obviously, you get, there are specialists, specialist researchers that can do this, but that have to do this particular work. I mean, one of the photos that I've got here in front of me has a guy testing headphones on a dummy. He's literally sitting, you know, with his particular computer that has the software that measures whatever is happening, because there's a microphone in front of the dummy, headphones on the dummy, and he's obviously trying to test the quality of headphones in an anechoic chamber. Now, viewing something like that, understanding the aim of what an anechoic chamber tries to achieve, is literally things that you would wish for in Namibia. It's literally things that you would like to also see being visualized in Namibia, which obviously boils down to something known as standardization or standards in your country. And what do standards mean and what do they translate to? Now, obviously, I've told you guys many times, specifically on Eagle FM, that Namibia uses our standards authority, NSI, Namibia Standards Institute, uses or just adopted the South African standards setup, which are obviously also aligned in many cases with the International Standards Authority that exists, which is ISO, and which obviously has to show you that this is our orientation that takes place. And it's a good thing that we emphasize the orientation discussion as well, because in many cases, we recognize that if we produce things, if we venture into the research and development realm of things, we've got to standardize ourselves with the knowledge base that is the closest to us, that is generating all this particular knowledge and all those particular standards as well, the South African economy and market. Meaning, you standardize yourself in that direction, you bounce it back into your economy, and then you scale up from there. But, on that particular note, dear listeners, we take our next musical break, which actually also signals the end of the discussion for today's session of My Sunday Morning Take. We take the musical break. After it, we'll come back and say our goodbyes. And obviously, also, while you're still enjoying the rest of your Sunday morning programming or your Sunday programming here on your number one talk radio station, that being Eagle FM.
Thank you. nation was my sanctuary. The Empire State to my sanity. Respiration is a counter strike against the giants and the rats alike. Oh, but you go clean in the shadows, yeah, you. And your dad's your shoes, oh, you. So good at writing tomorrow, would you?
They started looking much the same, and it's no surprise that I don't wanna listen too much. How can I give up on all the days I know I've won? There's nothing but rainbows. I believe in the shadows behind me. Thought I might be dropping out, but now I'm gonna work it out. I'm gonna work with me. I'm running like an Appaloosa, then I'm rolling like a rusty ship on a stormy sea. You know the people are saying strange things. Talk to the hill, cause I know you think the face is gone. I know I won. There's nothing but blue sky. There's nothing but blue sky. Nothing's gonna stop me now. I'm skimming like a skipping stone on a silver lake. I'll take it when the chips are down. But to play the perfect happy clown, you gotta make a mistake. And people are saying strange things, and I don't want to listen too much, yeah. Nothing but blue sky, blue sky. How can I tell you I know this won't be the last song? I don't want to listen too much. Oh,
And with the sounds there, specifically of Jamiroquai, with the song Blue Skies, this has been my Sunday morning take here on your number one talk radio station. Obviously, stay tuned for the rest of the programming to follow on after the break. Let's see each other during the course of the week. And alternatively, stay tuned for the rest of the programs to follow on after this. You're now listening to My Sunday Morning Take, the show where we dive into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else in between to help you make sense of how it works around you from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m. every Sunday. Want to take a trip through history's major events, or explore interesting geographical features, and even some interesting scientific developments? Well, join us on My Sunday Morning Take, every Sunday morning from 5 a.m. to 7 a.m., where we look into everything history, everything geography, a little bit of science, and everything else to help you understand what is happening in the world.